Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Orange and Brown Talk podcast here on a Wednesday. Dan Lobby, Mary-Kate Cabot, Ashley Bastock. As we get through the week here ahead of the start of the offseason program, we're going to hear from Kevin Stefanski and some players next week. We're going to have Andrew Berry tell us nothing about the draft next week. That's all coming up. But we're getting you ready for kind of football sort of slowly ramping up here. And so we thought today, let's talk about some things that we might be concerned about. Regarding the Browns roster as we get into this. So, Mary Kay, let's start with you. What are you concerned about here as we get going kind of in the ramp up to football season?
You know, I think it's going to be the same thing that I've been harping on all offseason, and I'm sure they're going to completely 100% prove me wrong. But until I actually see it, I think it's a thing. And I'm not over it yet. And that is the fact that I really think that they needed to add another double-digit sacker in some respect, whether it was going to be somebody on the inside or whether it was going to be somebody on the outside. And what we do know that they did was that they re-signed Za'Darius Smith, and that's great. He did do a nice job last season, but I still think they need another guy that can approach 10 sacks, double-digit sacks. I think it does so much for everybody else on the line when you've got two guys like that that you have to account for on every single play. I think it will help Miles. I think it will help everyone. Now, what we do know they also did was they signed Quentin Jefferson on the inside. They'll have Oboe coming back healthy. So they've got guys they can roll through there that can be disruptive, wreak havoc, and get to the quarterback. But I just can't help but think they needed and still need that surefire 9.5 sack guy, that surefire guy. And I want to see how this is going to go, because until the end of last season, Z was a little bit quiet in the sack department, not in the pressures department, not in the disruption department, but just in terms of sacking the quarterback, knocking the ball out, and blowing up a drive. And there are statistics that show that a sack on a drive is completely horrible for that drive and wrecks the drive. So I think they're important, and that's my number one concern heading in. I mean, it's not my number one concern. My number one concern is what the heck is going to go on with Deshaun Watson. But
yeah, that's the big one. That's the, like, everybody is wondering.
That's
that.
The big one. But for purposes of this pod and trying to talk about something other than Deshaun, that's where I'm going.
Yeah. So, Ashley, I'm wondering, was yours going to be on the defensive side?
This was also my number one one as well. But I do have an offensive one that, if you allow me to go next, that I'm going to say next, because. Yeah, I think this to me is the number one thing besides Deshaun Watson.
Okay, because I think there's a bigger defensive discussion here too, right? And that's, we've talked about this a little bit, right? They're kind of running it back. And obviously they've made a couple additions. Quentin Jefferson is one. They sort of traded out Sione Takitaki and Anthony Walker for Jordan Hicks. They did add Devin Bush as sort of a flyer. But I think generally speaking, this defense, it's kind of like, I don't know. They were really good last year, and they still have a lot of talent. I just wonder, I just wonder how this is going to work. They're a little bit older this year. Is running it back going to work? And I think the Za'Darius Smith re-signing is a prime example of that. It makes sense. I get it. But also, I just wonder, is it going to be the same as last year, or is there going to be a step back from last year? So I think that discussion, it all kind of goes hand in hand. Is running this defense back, specifically on that defensive line, going to work?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that is the biggest question for me. And it goes back to this idea of not just guys getting a year older, and especially the way they were banged up by the end of the season, but in the NFL, teams are constantly figuring you out. And again, when we saw this defense struggle, I could talk about this until I'm blue in the face, and it's going to be months before we know the answer to this. But in 2023, when they struggled, was when they had to face savvy veteran quarterbacks. The schedule this upcoming season, in terms of the quarterbacks they're facing, is just much more difficult than it was in 2023 when they had Russell Wilson carving them up, for example, right? And obviously Matthew Stafford. Those were in back-to-back weeks. I think when we saw them struggle, it had nothing to do with home versus away splits. It mostly had to do with really good quarterbacks. And those really good quarterbacks in 2024 are going to have a lot of film on this defense, basically looking exactly the same personnel wise. So I don't doubt Jim Schwartz is going to be able to account for a lot of this, but I do just think without that splashy quote unquote signing up front, when that's where everything starts in this scheme, it makes it harder, and it makes it harder to disguise certain things. And I'm really curious. I think it's a legitimate problem potentially that they're going to have to account for this offseason and plan for and really spend a lot of time working on.
Yeah, Mary Kay, I just, there's a part of me that, you know, talent from year to year should be able to, like, this is a very talented team. And, you know, Myles Garrett is still going to be Myles Garrett, and Denzel Ward and Martin Emerson, Greg Newsome, you know, all that talent is still there. And a lot of it is young. But I do think there's some risk in when you're starting to bank on guys who are on the wrong side of 30. I just think naturally there's some risk there. And so that, I think this is a good one to bring up, because Za'Darius Smith is one of those guys who's on the wrong side of 30. And then, I mean, it was a 2-year deal. Now I'm sure they can get out of it pretty easily after one, but it's one of those things where you can just shrug and say, hey, he was good. He was fine last year. He'll probably be fine again this year. Like, guys do start to go backwards at some point.
Well, I think it's interesting that he had that long stretch where he did not have many sacks at all. He only had the 2 until I think it was week 12 or something like that. And when you couple that with the fact that in the last half of last season, he also had like 1.5 in the last 7 games or something like that. That was a long period of time where he had about 3.5 sacks. It was like 15 games or something like that. I don't have the exact numbers in my brain right at the moment, but it's something like that. And then you've got Miles with his season-ending drought. And I'm sure it will be different this year, because Miles always starts out nice and strong. He's going to come out of the gate snorting and ready to roll. And we know how that goes. But somehow they have to find a way to keep him consistent throughout. I don't know if it's less practice. I don't know if it's fewer reps during the game, fewer snaps during the game. Whatever the case may be, is they need him to finish strong and be the player that he is heading into the playoffs, that he is heading into the opener. So maybe they'll get that figured out. But those two droughts have me slightly concerned. So we'll have to see how that goes. But on the bright side, they do have some guys coming back off of injury, so that should help them. Even though they are running it back, you're going to get Grant back healthy. You're going to get Juan Thornhill back healthy. You're going to get Oboe back healthy. Maurice Hurst back healthy. So I think that should help them a lot.
Okay, Ashley, what did you have?
Yeah, Dan, I know you kind of put up a story earlier today, and it included this point, but I'm going to phrase it a little differently, because I think my concern is, do the Browns have too much confidence in their receiver room as it stands currently? Because obviously, the big addition is Jerry Jeudy, And I think we saw them do what they essentially did with David Njoku a couple years ago in his extension. And it's this idea of giving a guy an extension, Moneyball thinking, based on the possibility of future performance and the height that you think his ceiling is versus what he did in the past. I think the problem is Jerry Jeudy, of course, doesn't have a 1,000-yard season. We kind of know what his reputation is like coming out of Denver. Obviously, he has Amari Cooper, who's one of his idols. I think that's something working in his favor. But the reality is Jerry Jeudy as that guy being super effective, being a 1,000-yard receiver, is still a question mark. He hasn't done it yet. And I think Amari Cooper is going to go out there and be Amari Cooper. I think on top of that, they obviously have Elijah Moore in that number three spot now. Those are firmly your top three guys. But Elijah, obviously, I think, underperformed last year. And to be fair to him, I think a big part of it is Deshaun was in and out of the lineup. He never really got that fair chance to show what he could do in that exact role that they imagined him in. So I think that was part of it. But for me, I still just wonder if they're overconfident in terms of their evaluation of pass catchers, because we know this regime has struggled with that. I mean, especially with drafting receivers and expecting them to be immediate contributors. So I'm very fascinated by how this receiver room plays out, because after Amari Cooper, who will perform and I'm sure have a Pro Bowl caliber season again, no matter what happens with Deshaun Watson's shoulder, I'm just fascinated to kind of see how this Jerry Jeudy experiment plays out, but really how the receiver room as a whole looks behind Amari.
Yeah, so there's two kind of conversations with this receiver room. And I think the Jeudy and Moore one is the first one. And so, Mary Kay, it does feel like the Browns are banking very heavily on this idea that both of those players will perform at levels that, frankly, they haven't in their careers to this point. That for whatever reason, getting them here in Cleveland, getting them with Deshaun Watson, is going to take those guys to the next level. Because the only sure thing is Amari Cooper. And as long as Amari Cooper is healthy, just write it in Sharpie. He's going to have 1,000 yards. He's going to be your best receiver. Like, no questions asked. But you can't really write anything about Jerry Jeudy and Elijah Moore in Sharpie. And so I think there's a lot of variance as to where either of those guys' seasons could go. I think that's a valid concern at the top of that receiver room.
I think so too. But there are a couple things working in their favor and in the Browns' favor. Number one, with Jerry Jeudy, I really do believe that he needs a mentor like Amari Cooper. I think he's going to want to be a better man, a better player for his mentor, Amari Cooper. Those guys are thick as thieves from down in South Florida. So now you've got the top three Browns receivers all speaking the same language, finishing each other's football sentences, understanding what they've all gone through growing up. And there's going to be a natural bond there. So I think that's good. And I think Jerry Jeudy will rise to the occasion. Sometimes you take a player out of a situation and they flourish and they are revived. And sometimes you have a first round pick in a city, and if it doesn't go the way everybody thought it was supposed to go, the fans are very, very hard on that player. We've seen it happen here many, many times. But you take that player out of that situation and put him onto another team where perhaps he doesn't have the pressure of living up to his first round status and being called a bust or whatever the case may be. And somehow they come alive. So I think that's the goal and the plan here, is that Jerry Jeudy is going to live up to his potential. As far as Elijah Moore is concerned, one of the things that Elijah has working in his favor is now he's been relegated to the number three receiver. He is not number two anymore. He's number three. And I think that's going to be a powerful motivator for him, because if he plays his cards right, he can get on the field sometimes in two receiver sets. Certainly he'll be there in three receiver sets most of the time. But if he wants those two receiver set reps, then he's going to have to show that he deserves them. So I think the competition is going to bring out the best in Elijah Moore. And I also do think if Deshaun Watson is the Deshaun Watson that's healthy and the Deshaun Watson of old, then both guys should elevate their game and be better than they were before. But there are a lot of ifs. And as you mentioned, Dan, you can't put anything in Sharpie right now because we just don't know how it's going to work. But if it works out the way that the Browns hope it works out, I think that they should be okay. One other slight concern here, even though we do know exactly what Amari Cooper is when healthy, he's not getting any younger. And as a receiver, when you start to get up into your 29th year, approaching 30, then sometimes you start to break down a little bit. And he is definitely one of those warriors that will go out there and he will play hurt. He will play through all kinds of injuries and pain. But there are certain things that you just can't play through. And the Browns have to hope that he hasn't reached that tipping point where now the body is starting to break down on him here and there a little bit. So as long as he's good to go, I think they'll be okay.
Yeah, and that kind of goes along with what we're talking about on the defensive side, right? You're when you start to count on guys who, you know, are 30 or older, and Amari's going to turn 30 on June 17th, you know, he's played 140 career regular season games. You can also add 5 postseason games to that. So he's played 145 games. You know, he's nearing the 10,000 yard receiving mark here. He's been doing this for a little while. And so, Ashley, this is one of those situations where there's no reason to think that all of a sudden he's going to start getting hurt this year. But at some point, things do start to break down. The Browns just have to hope that they can stay ahead of that, that they still have a guy who's going to be healthy and play every single game, and hope that they're not at some point on the receiving end of that decline.
Yeah, it does happen to every player eventually, and you want to believe that, okay, it's not coming this year for Amari Cooper. But we have seen him get banged up a little bit the last 2 years, and I mean, especially in 2022, he played through an injury that most guys would have ended their season over, but he hates missing games, and I think that's just the kind of player that he is, and it's such an ingrained mentality in him. But it is always a risk just when guys get into their 30s. I think especially at that receiver position, it's more likely that, hey, a decline is going to be coming. At the very least, you know that player already is who he is. And with Amari Cooper, that's not a problem because he's so good and so consistent. But it is, I think, a slight gamble at this stage of his career to just assume, okay, he for sure can give us everything we need the entirety of the season and we'll be good to go, because he's not some 23-year-old pass catcher anymore. And I think that's just the reality.
So the other part of this receiver room, and this wasn't mine, but I think if we're going to talk about receivers, we have to talk about it, is what we have behind that top three. And so you're looking at, you know, that top three that we just mentioned, Cooper, Moore, and Judy. And then behind them, it gets a little bit iffy. And I'll never get this out of my head. In that Jets game, and listen, the Jets have one of the best defenses in football, so that is what it is. But in that Jets game, that Thursday night Jets game, when Cooper was out and Elijah Moore got hurt, he had the concussion. And in the second half of that game, just sitting in the press box watching, like, nobody could get open. And that was a little concerning to me. And Mary Kay, they're coming back with Cedric Tillman in year two. David Bell is coming back in year three. There's some other guys, you know, some filler who could certainly get on the field, but not guys that you're really counting on as, you know, guys who are going to be able to step in and start for you if you need them to. I am a little concerned about the depth that they have behind their top three. I do think Cedric Tillman deserves a chance to grow beyond what he showed us last year. I don't know how much more time David Bell has. I think he's going to have to earn his spot on this roster. I don't know how much I trust the rest of that receiver room behind the top three. And we just talked about, like, we don't even really necessarily know how much to trust two of those top three. So I think the receiver room in general is still a question mark.
Well, when you look at those back end guys, David Bell, Cedric Tillman, and then also you've got Michael Woods coming back, you know, I think that these guys should be able to take a step up this year, once again, working with Deshaun Watson over the course of the season. I know the Browns are still really high on David Bell and Cedric Tillman. Not sure if Michael Woods has kind of fallen back behind the pack a little bit from missing all of last year with his Achilles injury. But yeah, I think there is a concern. And I think there's also a concern about the fact that I don't see that absolute burner. I still think you kind of want to have a burner, and I would be on the lookout for that kind of speed. And even if it's someone in the draft that you get in the third round or something like that, of course, third round, a third round receiver, but someone that just can stretch a defense for you. I still think that they need that guy.
Yeah. And they, you know, they've tried it in the past. Obviously there was the Anthony Schwartz draft pick. They tried it with Marquise Goodwin. You know, they were, I feel like they were going to try and do something with Jakeem Grant if he had stayed healthy, a guy that can maybe stretch the field a little bit, Ashley. But they, I mean, Mary Kay's right. They just haven't been able to find that super speedy guy who can deliver consistently. And again, I still just worry if you get to a situation where for a month, said Tillman or David Bell has to be your number two or your number three, that would concern me.
Yeah, I think, too, having that guy when you have Deshaun Watson as your quarterback is extra important because Deshaun, some of his best plays can come from improvising and having a guy just run and go and get the football. So I do think it hurts them that they don't have somebody like that right now. It almost reminds me or is analogous to their problems the last few years with returners and finding that speedy returner. I do think maybe they were over-reliant on Jakeem Grant in that role, obviously, the last 2 years, and then he suffers season-ending injuries in the preseason, and it's done. I do think he was always going to be a big part of their offensive plans from knowing his past relationship with Chad O'Shea. We know that he really liked him, and it seems like they've had ideas of who that guy could be, whether it was Jakeem or Marquise Goodwin the last couple of years, and both of those guys had problems staying on the field. And I know Marquise's health-related issues before the season, I think that really, really impacted him. So they don't have that guy yet. I'm curious to see what it's going to look like. Like, if can you get that guy in the draft and maybe try to revive essentially the Anthony Schwartz experiment, but get somebody who can catch the football this time. I think that's what you have to take into account there, because they certainly do not have that guy right now. And I think when you have a quarterback that can improvise, it's really important to have that speedster to stretch the defense.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Okay, I'm going to go back to the defensive side, and I want to talk about the linebacker position. So obviously JOK has a breakout year last year. We know that he's going to be kind of the guy in that room. He's going to play almost every snap this year. It was trending that way last year. Jim Schwartz came out and said that's what they want him to be. So I think we'll see that happen this year. I liked the Jordan Hicks signing. I think that's a good, you know, that's a grown up in that room. And that's a guy that knows Jim Schwartz. And that's a guy that I think is going to fill some of that leadership void that you lose with Anthony Walker and Sione Takitaki leaving. And then they take a flyer on Devin Bush, right? First round pick, has traits, put him in Jim Schwartz's scheme. Maybe kind of that, you know, less thinking, play downhill style is going to bring out the best in him. But also, Mary Kay, this kind of goes back to our receiver discussion. I could see a world where maybe JOK gets hurt. We've seen it happen in the past. Now, he was bigger last year. He came back bigger, and I think that's going to help him be able to absorb a lot of that contact. And he's so good at avoiding it anyway, so I'm not super worried about that. But I do think there's a scenario where, you know, even if JOK is healthy, maybe Jordan Hicks looks a little older. Maybe Devin Bush doesn't do what they hope he could do. And then here we are. We're kind of wondering about how thin that linebacker room has gotten all of a sudden. Is that even a concern in a Jim Schwartz defense, or will they be fine at that position regardless?
I think they'll be fine. I don't think it's a huge concern, because I don't think it's necessarily a premium position. I think you can get the job done. It's sort of like running back in a way in this Jim Schwartz defense, where you can accomplish what you need to accomplish, even if you have to plug in some different guys and go by committee and get an older guy that you signed as a free agent and get a guy who was a first round pick and he's trying to revive his career in a Devin Bush. I think you can get the job done. And here's one reason why I feel like that. It's because you rely a lot on your safeties, and you're going to play a lot of three safety looks, and your safeties can do some of the work of your linebackers. They can play some of those roles. They're big. They're hybrids. They're versatile. So I think they're okay. When you factor in the Grant Delpits and the Juan Thornhills and some of your bigger safeties like that, I think that you can almost consider them to be middle of the field warriors for you, and that you're going to be okay in that regard. I think you've got some run stoppers. I think you've got some guys that can cover. Even if JOK goes down for any length of time, I think they're covered. I think they're going to be okay, because it's not like you're losing a super premium position. If you lose Denzel, that's one thing, right? But if you lose one of your linebackers, I think you can cover that up pretty well.
Yeah, Ashley, how do you think that loss of those two guys, Taki and Walker, is going to affect them? And then, I mean, is there a concern here about depth at the position? Or are you kind of with Mary Kay on this one?
I think I'm kind of with Mary Kay, and it's mainly because of my understanding of the system. It's basically what you were alluding to, Mary Kay. Like, linebackers just don't matter as much in it. It's just not, they're not a premium position anyway on any team, but especially in this defense, it's almost like the linebackers and the safeties have similar responsibilities in terms of, it's a lot of reading and reacting, and the linebackers in particular are in that cleanup role. I do think of Anthony Walker and Sione Takitaki. I've said this before. I was surprised that Takitaki wasn't back. It felt like the Anthony Walker thing was just over here. He was ready to move on. It seemed like on locker cleanout day, he had kind of accepted that. It was obviously JOK's room. They didn't need him in that same role anymore because JOK made the jump everyone thought he would. But Takitaki, I think, added some depth there that, hey, if JOK gets hurt, he's another guy who can play every down for you, essentially, if you need him to. I thought he showed a lot the last 2 years. But I still think you can get by without him. If they didn't want to pay him that much money, it is what it is. Like, he went through a major injury in his career. Of course, he was going to chase the most amount of money he could get. Totally understandable. I do still think, yeah, you took a flyer on Devin Bush. Maybe it works out, maybe it doesn't. But because of the amount they play three safeties, I do think you can probably get away with some things here. And maybe if there's another instance like there was 2 years ago where five linebackers had season-ending injuries, then yeah, you might be in trouble if there's another fluke year like that. But I do think it would take something really fluky like that for me to be legitimately concerned with this defense at that spot.
I do think, like, this discussion we just had, and obviously we didn't talk about the Deshaun part of it, but Mary Kay, you did mention that, and we all know that's hanging over this, but I do think this discussion we just had should make Browns fans feel pretty good about things, because what did we talk about? Second edge rusher, depth at wide receiver, depth at linebacker, even if there's positions we left out, right? Like Nick Chubb, you know, are you concerned about running back? They'll be able to figure that out. Your tackle situation, you're pretty stable. They figured it out last year. I think this sort of speaks to the state of this roster, Mary Kay, and how they're in really good shape. Like, the questions we have are a lot about depth and a lot about some of the other guys, again, outside of the really big one, which is the quarterback.
Right. It's not like you're heading into the season wondering who's going to play offensive tackle for you, right? They have the opposite problem there. They should have, by rights, if everyone comes back nice and healthy, three starting caliber offensive tackles in Jack Conklin, Jed Wills, and DeJuan Jones. So there are some teams that are trying to figure out who is going to protect the blind side of their quarterback. That's not a good feeling heading into the draft or heading into the season, not knowing who's going to do that for you. And many teams do not build strong enough through the lines. The Browns do. as Andrew Barry even told us, we're kind of snobs. We're defensive line snobs, and they are. They're offensive line snobs too. And they're built very, very tough through the lines. And if you have that and you have your quarterback, then you can accomplish a whole lot of things. So I think they feel good about those basic positions in the trenches enough to feel like they can achieve their goals this season. Once again, you know, they probably will prove me completely wrong on the defensive line rotation, and those guys will total a bunch of sacks and get a bunch of strips and bat down passes and all those kinds of things. But for the most part, they feel really good about the trenches and they feel good about their quarterback. So I think that they should go into this season feeling like they can contend for the AFC North, which is ultimately one of their main objectives.
Yeah. And this has sort of been Andrew's MO since he's gotten here, right? You know, for the most part, make sure your roster is pretty much set through free agency, and then you go into the draft and you don't necessarily have to chase guys. So Ashley, we've seen this is what Andrew likes to do when it comes to roster building.
Especially, I think, when he doesn't have a first round pick. I think they know, okay, your chances of finding that immediate starter, immediate consistent contributor, it goes down the further down you get into the draft. There are some obvious exceptions. We can talk about those. Obviously, Puka Nacua last year, a great example of a guy who fell way late into the draft and was amazing as a rookie. But those guys are the exception, not the rules. So I do think, especially when you can't rely on those first round picks, it's better to not have to chase positions of need in the draft. I think I've said this before. I've written it before. Andrew Berry wants to control what he can control. So if it means getting those guys via trades, getting those guys via free agency before the draft, they would much rather do that. And we've seen it the last 3 years.
Okay, there we go. Our Wednesday edition of the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. We'll have a Hey Mary Kay edition of the pod coming up later this week. If you want to get involved in that, you have to be a Football Insider subscriber, cleveland.com/Browns, the blue banner at the top of the page. Make sure you get involved with our texting so that you can text us your questions for the Hey Mary Kay edition of the podcast. We'll also have another big draft pod coming your way with Tim Bielik and Lance Reisland. If you missed the one on Friday, we talked a lot about pass catchers, wide receivers, and tight ends. And this week, we're going to focus a lot on defensive linemen, so defensive tackles and edge rushers. And we'll do another Browns mock draft as well. So just get subscribed to this podcast on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Find us on YouTube, Cleveland Browns on cleveland.com, and find us on Instagram, Orange and Brown Talk. For Mary Kay and Ashley, I'm Dan. Thanks for listening, everybody.